in Paris, and thank you so much. Oh, I'm an alcoholic. That's an important part. And I want to thank the group and Sam for having me here, and also thank my friends for driving up with me. I wasn't exactly the, didn't really give them a lot of time. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's great to see a lot of faces that I recognize and some new faces that I've just met. And, you know, whenever I speak, I always get a little, the day after, I just kind of get a little weird. And so I'm hoping that'll be set aside, and I always pray constantly, and I always take time to, you know, to say a prayer before I get up here and speak, and sometimes I do it with a group of people, sometimes I do it by myself. And I went into the bathroom here, and there is just this perfect little table that you can just get down on your knees and put your hands right up on there, and it's just like the perfect little pray table I'm on in front of my house. So now that all that's been said, my home group is Jaywalkers. It meets in Richmond. We meet on Tuesdays and Fridays, so if you're ever in town, I've seen a lot of you there, please join us. I love how you guys are very organized and have all your, you know, speaker CDs all lined up and everything. You know, this morning I went to a meeting and my boyfriend was speaking, and you know, it's just such a amazing gift that I've been given here. Like, I don't even know how I can possibly ever. I think that's why I maybe get a little weird, because it's such a gift that I've been given that I really want to, I hope that I can convey a message of hope to all the, you know, to anyone. And, you know, I have a sponsor. I sponsor the woman. I've, you know, done the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've literally had a very spiritual experience and a very big change in myself and my life. And, you know, when I was little, I always, you know, I would always try really hard to just kind of be okay in this world. You know, I thought people would ask me when I was little, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I always said happy. Like, I really thought that was the point of life. Like, I wanted to be happy. And I thought I was supposed to be happy all the time. And I knew that there was something that I was trying to figure out, and I worked my entire life to try to figure out whatever that was, and I could just never really put my finger on it. And you know, I don't know if this is really true. I make stuff up in my head, so kind of bear with me. But you know, I know my mom told me that, you know, when I was 2, she had a screwdriver on the table, and I took a little sip, and she found me underneath the coffee table with a pen in my ear drawing. And she said after that, the rest of the night, she kept having to watch her drink because I would kept trying to drink it. So I guess I was kind of an alcoholic from the get-go. And, you know, growing up, my childhood was a little crazy, you know. I didn't really realize that. I really put up a lot of these walls and delusions. Some of the delusion was just how my mind works, and some of it, like, I really did not want to know the world I was living in. So that's what I did, you know. We would, you know, I mean, I'd get woken up in the middle of the night and we'd move, you know. And, you know, it was just, like, I had eczema really bad, and, like, it was just not, like, I don't think I had a very good childhood. Like, I don't remember being, like, it was just not good, you know? And, you know, like, my eczema was, and it would ooze, and it was stinky, and I was just not cool, and I was the cuties kid, and, you know, it's just, I don't know. And I kind of, you know, if it was bad, I just kind of forgot about it, and I just pretended like it didn't exist. And I, you know, when I was, you know, 13, I was, you know, I mean, I don't want to paint this gloom and doom picture, but it really was, like, you know, I mean, I just felt like I was surviving this world, and I didn't get the purpose and the point. I'm like, why am I here? And, you know, like, I look around at my family, and I'm like, what is wrong with us? Like, why can't we get this thing? And, you know, I didn't get it. And I was, you know, suicidal and just, like, miserable. And I really just, I wanted it to, I didn't see the point. And I knew that, you know, I remember, like, one Christmas, like, I was just real, like, I stayed up all night the night before Christmas, like, staring at my uncle's gun. Like, I didn't sleep at all, and I just stared at them all night, Christmas Eve, and I was like, oh, it'd be so fantastic to just have it be over. And, you know, I mean, I knew my mom would be devastated, my mom would be devastated, and, you know, but I just, like, that's just how I felt, you know, and I don't know if this is really accurate, like, of what my life really looked like, but, you know, it's how I remember it. And, you know, I turned 13 and I got a job in a restaurant and I was really awkward and I was a bus person, I would like drop the tray and like I was just scared and awkward and like, ugh. And, you know, my aunt was older than me and she was kind of like my sister and, you know, we'd have parties at my house and, and I don't remember, like, having this, like, aha moment of, like, ooh, hallelujah. But I remember, like, you know, stealing the beer from work and sneaking in the bathroom and chugging it down. And, you know, I don't know if there was, I don't remember really what happened, but I know that from that point on, like, whatever that was, like, all of a sudden the life was good again, and all of a sudden I was cool, and life was, I don't know, it was just good, and it wasn't ooky, and I went to my first bar, and it was fantastic, and, you know, when I was, worked at that restaurant, I got caught for stealing the beer and drink it there, and this woman, that caught me, like, she was devastated, and she looked at me, and she was bawling, I mean, crying hysterically, just looking at me going, oh, I mean, she wasn't mad, she was sad. She was like, you are 13 years old, and you are stealing beer at work and drinking it at work. She's like, this is not good. And I looked at her, and I was like, I felt bad that I made her cry this way, but I did not get it. Like, I didn't get it. And, but I did feel bad that she was crying like that, you know? And I still, like, I'll never forget it. And, you know, it's 15, and I went to my first bar, and I will tell you, it was my first spiritual experience ever. It literally was magic. Like, there was, I walked in the door, and, the bar was, you know, it's all the walls were black, and they had all these, like, antique vacuum cleaners, like, on the walls. And, you know, they all were, like, from Europe and dressed really cool. And I walked in, and, like, there was bright lights, and it was like, oh! I mean, it really was. Like, it was fantastic. And I found my home. And I, you know, my senior superlative was most likely to own a bar, and I understand why. Because, like, I loved that place. And I loved bars. And, you know, I had fake IDs, and I would tell my mom, like, I had fake IDs, and I was like, Mom, it's not about the drinking. Like, I just want to go and I want to see this band. And, you know, and I don't know if that was true or not. Like, I don't know. I know I drank there, you know. I know that, you know, I would drink and I'd black out and I'd pass out in ditches, and sometimes I would, you know, get sick here and there, or maybe end up with someone I didn't want to, or things like that. But it wasn't a, you know, whatever, man. Like, who cares? I thought that was just how it was. And I was very willing to pay that itchy-bitchy price. I mean, you know, I mean, it didn't even, you know, occur to me. And, you know, I went on to college and picked my college by, you know, the bars. And I, when I went to college, and I didn't really go very much because of the bars. And I would, you know, I didn't have much money, and I would have like $2, and, you know, I could go out and get blacked out drunk with that $2, you know. And it was fantastic, and I loved it, and I was having a great time, and that's what I did every night, you know. And my mom had given me this big thing of peanut butter and this big thing of oatmeal, and that's what I ate because I didn't have any other money. And, you know, it was good. And, you know, and I don't, if there was bad consequences, other people may have seen that there was consequences, but I did not. Like, I was in heaven as far as I was concerned. And I stayed there for a long time, you know, and really not much changed in my life for a really long time. I moved to Richmond, and I got a job in those bars so I could drink all the time. And, you know, I moved from bar to bar maybe. But it was still all good. And, you know, but slowly, like, I don't know. It was slowly, you know, I kind of remember being like, ugh, if I don't slow this down a little, I may have to stop. You know, if I don't slow down my drinking, I may have to stop. And I was still, you know, blacking out all the time, and, you know, like, I remember, like, being like, well, you know, maybe I'll just do a lot of these shots. Like, maybe I'll just have a half a shot, and then I'll do another half a shot in the next round. And that didn't really work, and then I was like, well, maybe if I leave work and, like, immediately after when I get off. And that didn't really work. And, like, and I didn't really want to slow down or quit drinking. I was just kind of scared if I didn't, I would eventually have to stop. That was, like, what I wanted. And you know, it did, like, there was a purpose in this world for me. And I was one of the, I belonged, and I fit in, and it was my bar, and, you know, but I remember, like, slowly, you know, sometimes, like, I had to get off work, and I would get ready to take that drink, and I'd be like, oh, crap, like, oh, what if it happens again, you know, what if I make an idiot of myself again? And then it was kind of, you know, like, one night in specific, I had gotten off work, and everybody from all the bars would kind of come and party at one bar. And I got off work, and everybody was coming to hang out, and I was getting ready to get my, you know, do my shots, and I was like, I was scared to take the shot because it wasn't working anymore. All of a sudden, like, I wasn't, it kind of did the opposite. And instead of, like, feeling like I was one of the kids and everybody was my friend and I loved everybody, like, all of a sudden I felt alone. And it was not good. And, so, like, I wasn't doing that trick. Like, I wasn't feeling, like, a part of, you know, this world. Like, and, You know, I was just wasn't working. And then it was getting really bad, and I was blacking out, like, one shot, one drink, and I'd black out, and I'd wake up, and everybody's pissed off at me, and I didn't know what happened. And, you know, it wasn't working. And I didn't ever wanted to quit drinking. I wanted everything to be okay. So I tried all my little tricks and none of them worked. So I started dating this guy that, you know, he was an alcoholic. Well, we drank together and all this stuff, and he started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought this was a kind of a good idea because I really wanted to kind of like chill out on my drinking. And, you know, so I did. Like, I was able to kind of chill out for a little while. And, you know, I didn't really want to quit. I just wanted to not black out. Because what would happen is I knew that if I got off work and I had a drink, then that was it. Like, all bets were off. So I had to get off work and get home, like, immediately before that happened. And then once I was home, I was kind of okay. And, you know, we would kind of start over again. And, so, you know, this is what I did. And he relapsed, and I don't know, I completely, like, lost my cookies. I fell apart. And, I went to, it introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I started, you know, these people that I didn't even know were, like, calling me and talking to me and coming and hanging out with me. And friends of mine that I knew in AA were, you know, telling me that I was just as sick as he was. And other friend of mine, like, bought me a big book and was like, read to the wives. And, you know, I realized that something was not right. And so I went to Al-Anon. And I saw something there, and I didn't know what it was, but there was something there. And so, you know, I got a sponsor there, and you know, at this point, what I kind of looked like was I wasn't drinking that much, but I had no solution, and I was in this, like, constant anxiety attack, and I couldn't shower, I couldn't go into the grocery store and, like, make a decision. Like, it was just so big. Everything was so big and so overwhelming. Every decision, everything was just way too much. And I couldn't, it was cold outside, and I just wanted to, like, put socks on that matched. And I was, like, struggling. I was about ready to get fired from my job. I'd already gotten demoted. Like, I'd been a waitress my entire life, and I get demoted. And, you know, this is, like, what me not drinking looked like. You know, me drinking was bad, and I was blacking out and making an idiot of myself and getting fired and doing all that kind of stuff. But those consequences did not matter to me. They didn't matter. It was when it wasn't working anymore. And so I was trying to do something. Alcohol wasn't working, so I thought maybe it was a problem, so I was trying not to quit. So I was trying not to drink, and then that wasn't working. And then what do? Like, I'm in big trouble. Like, drinking's not working, and not drinking is even worse. Like, I'm screwed. You know, and I am back at that place where, I mean, I did not, my whole, I have a big family, and, like, I seriously never had children, because I did not want to bring them in this horrible world. It was horrible for me, you know? I was like, how could I bring anyone into this horrible place. It's just torturous. And that's how I felt. And I was like, oh, it just sucked. And you know, I was talking to my sponsor in Al-Anon. I think I had her for like 4 days. I really don't remember this time that much. Because I was just a mess. And I was like realizing, like, Al-Anon was a safe enough place for me to kind of realize that something was wrong. And that, like, one of my friends that I had talked about, I had taken the guy that I was dating to a detox, and I just couldn't deal. And he had told me to pray, and I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know what he was talking about. I never prayed before. I looked at him like he was crazy. I was like, are you, like, pray? I don't know how to do that. He's like, Dawn. Like, just go outside, be quiet for a minute, and just sit there and see what happens. Like, the answer will come. And I was desperate enough, I tried it. And, like, this crazy thing happened. Like, all of a sudden, I felt peaceful, and I felt quiet, and I knew what to do. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So, I did it again. And, like, all of a sudden, like, I realized, like, there was something wrong with me. My whole life, I thought it was my family. I thought it was how I grew up. I thought it was my mom and dad's fault. I thought it was because I had the eczema. I thought it was because I couldn't get out of the bars. I thought it was my boss. I thought you guys were all idiots. I thought you were fools. I was mad. I was frustrated. And I didn't even know that I thought this. But that's what I thought. That's what I learned here. And I could not get it. I mean, and I realized for the first time, like, it's not all that. It's me. That there's something wrong with me. And I think that's why I was willing to go to Al-Anon. Because, like, I knew something was wrong. And I was like, crap, I gotta do something. And so I felt safe enough when I was here to, like, I don't know, this woman told me, she's like, I've never seen anyone surrender like you did. Like, I was just, like, on the floor crying, going, oh my gosh, like, I cannot believe, like, I can't believe I'm not dead. That was the first thing that happened. Like, there was one day I was like, I can't believe I've never died. And I'm telling you, there's no reason I should be alive. Because I've done some enough things. I mean, I drove home in a blackout for 20 years every night. For 20 years. I drove home in a blackout. You know? Never got a DUI. Never got arrested. I did lots of things I should have been arrested for. You know, but it amazed me that I was still alive. And then I realized that, like, my family was really sick. I realized for the first time that my childhood wasn't really that good. It was safe enough for me to realize that. You know, slowly the delusion was kind of going away. I could look at my life for what it really was. And I whispered to my sponsor, I was like, she's like, why are you whispering? And she's like, I can't tell you if you're an alcoholic or not. You have to talk to another alcoholic. And, like, I get goosebumps just talking about it because, like, it was such a gift. And, so I went to this meeting, and I went with the guy I was seeing at the time, and I had been to meetings with him before, and I am telling you, I hated it. I went to these meetings, and you guys were up there, and all I heard is you were liars, you were manipulators, and I was sitting there, and I was like, I knew it. I'd look at my boyfriend, like, I knew it. It is your fault. And you're going to hurt me. Like, and I, because it was his fault. And I would be mean to him afterwards. Like, I did not hear any, like, there's no solution. And I went this time, like, this woman went up there and spoke. And I don't remember what she said, but I know that she described things that were so deep down inside of me that I had been searching for my whole life, to try to figure out what it was, and she described it. And she was better. And I knew, I knew she could help me. And I knew that finally I had found what that was that I'd been looking for my whole life. And it was amazing. And I called, I talked to her and I thanked her afterwards. And I was talking to her, I think, for like a half an hour. And I didn't even realize there's this huge line of people behind her. And I looked behind and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, I had no idea. And I called her that night and I asked her to be my sponsor. And it was so sweet. She like kind of got a little teary eyed. It was so sweet. And oh man, the transformation began. And I went with her to a meeting. It was my home group. And there was this long line of women there that were giving me their phone numbers. And I was, like, writing down descriptions of them because, like, I was like, oh, my gosh, you've got to. I was so overwhelmed and just, like, I didn't even know. And my sponsor told me to call these women, and I did. And I think I've met, like, two other women that were as crazy as me when I got here. I couldn't even trust myself. Like, and I'm not kidding. Like, I would call that Al-Anon sponsor and be like, what do I do now? She's like, get in the shower. And I would get in the shower, and I'd call afterwards. I'd be like, what do I do now? She's like, brush your hair. Like, that's the state I was in. And so I got here, and I called these women. I would talk to them forever because, like, it just gave me some relief. I didn't know who they were. I didn't care. I really didn't. Like, I got some relief from that hell that I'd been in. And so I just let it loose. And I just for hours. I don't even think I gave them a second to talk. And I'd see these women afterwards, and they're like, yeah, I talked to you last night for 2 hours. I didn't remember. I really didn't. And I think some of my brilliance told them that I really didn't. I didn't even know if I was just so, I don't know. But, there's some funny little stories. She told me she was speaking out of town, I'd heard that you're just supposed to say yes, you know, so that's what I did. I just said yes, and I just did what, I don't know. I went out to eat with this group of people afterwards, and I sat down at this table, and, I'll never forget it. And there were all these people my age, or like a little younger than me. And I was horribly awkward. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. It was horrible. And I'm sitting there, and there's like, we're at a restaurant, and there's like a couple that has a pitcher of beer. And I'm looking at this pitcher of beer going, oh my God. And I'm freaking out. And, my nose is a little runny. And I realized, like, I looked at them, and I was like, this is the first time that I've ever in my entire life, ever, gone out with a group of people of an age and not had a drink. And it was so weird. Like, I didn't even know. Like, I didn't even realize. And I was, like, realizing. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I was realizing what a disaster I was. But it was because I was in a safe zone of the police that I knew I'd be okay. And I knew that there was a way out. Like, just like when I was a kid, like, when it was bad, I didn't want to know. Because I knew there wasn't a way out. I knew it. And, like, I remember when I was, like, my brother was kind of getting worried about me. My brother worried about you, man. You got to be pretty bad. And my brother was like, Dawn, like, why are you drinking? Like, no, he was like, why aren't you thinking anymore, Dawn? Like, witnesses when I was drinking. He's like, why aren't you thinking anymore? And I looked at him and I was like, dude, this is not a good idea for me to think. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, that's what it's all about. If you don't think, what are you? And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and I remember, this is another one of those things. I think I felt this, but I'm really not sure. I remember kind of thinking, like, that's why I drink. I was like, I knew. Like, it was not good. Are you thinking? It's not good. It just was not good. And, anyway. So, my speaker, like, I don't even know what happened this 2 weeks, I'll be quite honest. Like, I don't remember. Thank goodness. Like, I see new people, and I'm like, shoo, sweetie. Hopefully you won't remember, you know? It is rough. And, I wanted to, like, crawl under a bed, like, under the covers, and stay there forever where no one could ever find me. That's what I wanted to do. And you guys were asking me to go out and hang out with people. Like, the last thing, and I was, oh, I did it because I knew. And, so my sponsor said, you know, she was going to speak, and she said, you want to go? And I said, yes. And I remember the guy was saying at the time, like, where are you going? And I was like, I don't know. Like, or, like, what state? I was like, I don't know. When he's like, when are you going to be here? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know. I just did it. And I was, like, about ready to get fired. That guy broke up with me, and I didn't have, I was making, like, $200 a week, and I didn't have, I had a car, but it was illegal, and my license, like, I just kind of let everything go, because I just couldn't keep up with everything. And, so I didn't really have anything, and I needed to make money to move out, and I didn't have anything. And she was like, Dawn, if you knew this, everything else will fall into place. She's like, if you focus on this, everything else just kind of works out. So I did it. Because I'll be damned if I hadn't tried. I mean, I tried my whole life to make this world work. I failed. And that was like my, and people told me that was a gift when I came in here. And I wanted to punch them in the face. I was like, this is a gift. Like, because I did not feel good. It was not good. But I did it. I know I did. And, because I felt better. You know, I'd call a woman on the phone, and I'd feel better for a couple minutes. I'd get off the phone, I'd smoke half a cigarette, and I'd come back. Like, God damn it, my damn head. I'd come back. And I just wanted to shut up, man. I wanted to take a spoon and shovel it out and get rid of it. I wanted to shut up. Because it just... Anyway. So I went with her to... we went to Virginia Beach, I think, and they were doing a workshop on the four step. I know. The reason I tell you this story, because I just think it's kind of funny. I don't know if I'm my sister or not, but I think it's funny when I'm done. So, you know what? We go, and it's on the four step. And I'm going, oh, no. Like, my sponsor always told me, she's like, Dawn, I'm trying to jump ahead into step eight. Oh, my gosh, am I going to have to make amends to all these people? And she's like, Dawn, you're on step one. Just stay in step one. Stay where you are. And so this workshop was on the four step. And I was like, what do? On the four step. And I don't know. Should I listen? Should I not? Like, it was just a mess. And so... You know, there was a guy that drove there, and I went with one of my sponsee sisters was there, and I was really, like, intimidated by this guy, and she told me, she was like, you guys are going to get married, and this guy was, like, older, and he was respectable, and, like, he was the kind of person, like, I could normally get what I wanted, but sometimes, you know, like, they are not going to put up with your crap. Like, he was that kind of person, like, he's not going to put up with my crap. And I looked at her like she was crazy. She's like, you guys are going to get married. And it's my boyfriend now. That's why I tell you that story. You know, and I don't know, like, it just, slowly it just started unraveling. I went to my sponsor's house, and she read to me out of this book, and I remember when we first started reading, like, the first time we met, or second time we met, and she was like, tell me that most people don't make it. And I was pissed off at her. I was like, but, you know, she did amazing things for me. She would, come to find out she was pregnant. I didn't know this. And she was also younger than me. I didn't know that either, but I really didn't care, man. She was just like a She was a gift. It was like an absolute gift. God just put it all down in a big old package for Nan, so I'm incapable of doing any of it myself. So here's a big package, and I just, there it is. And she was part of that package. And she would let me, I stayed at her house, and she, like, woke up one morning at 6 o'clock in the morning to read from the big book for me. And step two was just, like, I had no idea how uncomfortable I was with God. I had no clue. You know, I'd read this book, The Last Temptation of Christ. Sorry if that's offensive to anyone, but, like, I kind of had this idea of that I was like Jesus, and I was supposed to be perfect, and God was just going to punish me forever and ever until I was perfect. And I was incapable of being perfect. And I thought God was just going to, like, punish me forever. And, like, not even punish me, but, like, torture me. And I really had a bad resentment to God, because I just, like, why would you put me on this horrible earth? Like, why would you do that to anyone you love? You know, I didn't get it. And you know, I remember, like, I was newly sober, and I didn't have a car, and I moved in this house, and I had to ride the bus, and, oh, man, like, that was a blow to my ego. Now, my sponsor was, you know, she was like, Don, it'll all work out. You just need to be open. If you need to ride the bus, that's fine. You can just use that hour on the bus to call other alcoholics in AA. Don't worry about it. And so I didn't. I was like, all right. And I just did it. And I remember I was, like, waiting for the bus, and it was on Broad Street. Not if any of you are familiar with Broad Street in Richmond, but it's a really busy street. And there was this man that was passed out on the sidewalk. And he had peed himself. And, you know, it was very obvious that he had urinated on himself, and he had passed out, but his head was, like, over the side of the curb, like, on the street. And all these buses are, like, going by. I mean, it was, like, his head was, like, you know, like a bus could run him over. And he was passed out, all they had to do was kind of turn, and he was, I mean, goner. And everyone is just walking by this man, like, he is just, didn't even notice him. And I look at him, and I was, like, oh, my God, that's another alcoholic. That man could save my life someday. And I looked at him, and I picked him up, and all of a sudden, like, all these guys came from nowhere, because here's this girl picking up this drunk who had peed all over himself, and they're like, no, we got him. And they moved him over to this, you know, over to the grass, and I realized, like, you know, I don't know, that man could be my hero someday, because I heard people speak that had said that they were that drunk person passed out on the side of the corner, and they were saving my life now. So why couldn't it be that man that did it later? You know, or someone else, or, you know, who knows, maybe it's my turn to do that for somebody. And, you know, and all of a sudden I had this purpose on this world. You know, I was a part of something. Like, all that stuff I'd wanted my whole life, it was here, and it was real. And I had this purpose, and I was, like, hanging out with these women I would never hang out with otherwise. And you know, those women were just as important to me as those women that had been around forever. And, you know, I don't know, it was amazing. And, you know, I when we were doing the second step, oh man, it was just awkward, and I did not want to. I could believe in AA and this whole deal, but when you said that word God or my Creator, holy Jesus, forget it, or like all these other words they had, like, I just couldn't handle it. My sponsor was like, Dawn, so we came to believe. She's like, you don't have to believe now. She's like, you just have to know that you can't do it. And I was like, ooh, I got that now, man. I know I can't do it. You know, I know that. She's like, that's it. She's like, it says we came to believe. And like I saw it work in other people. I saw it work in her. And you know, it's like the first time I've ever, I loved her in a way I had never loved anyone. And it was the beginning of realizing it opened a whole new world to me. And that love has grown. You know, it started with her and my relationship, and it's been with like other women and, you know, my boyfriend, and I wanted to be with my family, but I'm still not quite there yet. Not the way that I want it to be. I don't know why I have a hard time with my family, but I do. I want them to have what I have. And I'm mad at them that they're not. They don't. How sad is that? But that's the truth. And so the holidays are really hard for me because, it is hard for me to see them the way they are. And I'm uncomfortable. And I want them to have this, and they don't, and it makes me mad. And really, I should have some compassion for them. And I want to have that so bad, but I don't. I don't. And I got on my knees, and I was like, I remember we were outside of my apartment. It was nice outside, and I really liked being outside because I felt like the wind kind of helped me to be more connected with everything. I don't know how, but I felt like, I don't know. We were outside, and we got on our knees, and we did the third step prayer, and it was really weird, and I was like, people, like, this is not normal. And the fourth step, like when I was at that conference, I was talking about the fourth step. I remember I was like, man, this fourth step sounds awesome. Like, I can't wait to do it. And this girl was like, she's like, yeah, well, you're not really an alcoholic. She's like, you sure don't look like you drank like a fifth a week. I don't even know what she said. And I was so offended because, like, the truth was at that point I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic or not. And I was really scared that I wasn't. Because, like, where am I going to go? If I don't belong here, where am I going to go? And I was really scared I wasn't. I couldn't admit that to you guys, but it was true. And so this girl was, like, really not nice to me. And she's like, you don't look like an alcoholic to me. And then I started doing the four step, and I was like, man, these people are, like, crazy. Like, this is not... I remember I called my sponsor, I was like, this is not right. Like, no person should have to endure this because you just shouldn't. Like, this is horrible. And I was like, throw my fourth step and anyway. She's like, Dawn, it's not about that. And I was like, I did not get it at all. And it was huge, man. I mean, it was like volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes. And I did not realize that I was angry. I did not realize that I had all this inside of me. You know, when I was little, like, I caught up my hate box. You know, and all my anger and all my hate would go in this hate box. And, so I guess I'd always had it. and as I did it, I don't know, I just didn't. It was hard. It was not comfortable. It was not any of that stuff. It was not fun. I went to do my 4-step, and I got in a fight with my mother when I was at my sponsor's house right before. I was crying hysterically. I just felt so vulnerable. And that's how I feel before I speak. And after I speak. So vulnerable. Because I get up here and I pray, and all of a sudden, like, all this stuff comes out. The truth is like, I'm not comfortable with it. I want my walls up. I want you over there. And when those walls come down, that's what happens when I pray and I let you in here. I am not comfy. And I don't like it and I want to run. That's what I go to. So it was time for me to do my fifth step, and I was not comfortable. And my sponsor already knew all the stuff that was in my fifth step. But I was not comfortable with her being in that space, and I wanted to run. And she's so gentle and kind, and she, I was reading it, and she was gently and kindly, like, selfish and self-centered part. Like, I couldn't see it. I couldn't. So she was, I mean, like, each one, I couldn't see it, and it was huge. And she was, and I was just, like, I poured my heart and soul in this thing, and it kind of wrong. I was horrified. So, like, I took off, and I ran, because that's what I do. And thank goodness I did not have a car when I was early Friday, because, like, I literally wanted to, this is my go-to, whatever, I wanted to run in her neighbor's field and get on the ground and suck my thumb like a little girl and hide. And I was going to suck my thumb, but there was people that could see me, so I didn't. And, I mean, I felt so vulnerable. And I would have hitchhiked, but I was not really, like, I don't know. I went back in for some reason, and we sat down and we did it. And we were there for, I don't know, 12 hours, really long time. And each one, she gently and kindly, like, pointed out where I was selfish and self-centered. And, when I was done, I was tired. And I went home and I did the fifth and sixth step, or, I mean, the seventh and eighth, yeah, no, sixth and seventh. And I fell asleep and I didn't know, I don't even know, but I will tell you that I was so, and it was done in one big package by the same thing. It's all the same. And I can't even describe what it did for me unless you've done it, because yeah, I could tell you, and you're absolutely the most amazing and freeing and best gift that I could ever grant anyone in this entire world. And every bit, every piece of every uncomfortable thing that I went through, the entire 2 weeks, the 4 weeks, the whole entire time before my entire life, all of it was worth it to get what I got from that fourth and fifth step. It fixed me. It fixed me. I was fixed. Because I knew what was wrong. And, I went on, and then I was kind of amazed, like, ooh, ooh, like, after that, you're like, ooh, 8, 9, 10, holy crap, you know? 8, I still, like, I've been sober almost 5 years, and I still have lots of amends to make. I'm making them, but I don't know, like, people are always like, you gotta make amends, and I don't know, some of them, like, I just wasn't, I don't know, like, my dad, you know, my dad was a heroin addict, and that's why my childhood was kind of crazy, and I hated that man with every cell of my body. I hated him like my life depended on it. And I was free of that. And I was able to let him love me like a father. And he has now passed away. He was my dad when he left. I did not hate him at all. I had compassion for him. I want that compassion for my mom and my brother, and I don't know when it's going to come, but I want it to come now. But it hasn't. What a gift. I did not make, I don't know, something happened with my amends, and I wanted to make it to my dad so bad, but he kept calling me and canceling, because he was very sick. And I think he knew, and he had a hard time looking at me and my brother in person, because he had so much guilt and shame. And because he died of a direct result of that, and it was a very slow and painful and miserable, horrible death. And what compassion I have for that man to go through that for that long. And out of mercy for him, I did not make amends to him while he was alive. I went and made amends after he died at his grave plate. And I don't know what happened, but something did. I was willing to make the rest of the amends.
It's like I stopped making amends until I could do that for him to start up again. I don't know if that's really the truth, but I just don't want to make the amends. No idea, but, so then I wasn't quite done all my steps yet, and I met this girl in AA, and I just so connected with her, and I loved her so much, and, I wanted her to ask me to be her sponsor so bad, but I kept referring her to other women because I wasn't done my 12 steps, but we both knew, you know, you just know, and eventually, like, she asked, she was like, you know, and can you be my sponsor, and I called my sponsor, I was like, can I do it, and she's like, you have to at least make one amends first, so I did, and it was just fantastic, and I mean, just, I knew, like, even before that, that, like, that's why I was put here. That's it. That's why I'm here. And, like, when I was little, you know, I remember, like, when I told you guys, I never shared that I had eczema. Like, not many people know I had eczema that bad. But I remember when I was little, like, and I had the eczema so bad, and I would look at my mom sometimes and be like, you know, Mom, if I can just take all the eczema in the world so no one else has to go through this, then I will do that. And I meant it. And like, I kind of felt that same way about, like, sobriety. Like, everything that I'd been through, like, I knew it's for a purpose. Like, I knew it helped people, you know? And then, like, I was even kind of myself, like, I had to take that one sponsor to a detox center, and I'd never been in a detox. And I was like, damn, why couldn't I have been in a detox? Like, how crazy is that? You know? And I was so passionate and so on fire, and I don't know how much time left, but, you know, I wish I stayed that way, but that's not what happened. Like, I don't know, I went, started going to school, and that sponsee left, and this sponsee left, and that friend left, this friend left, and the next thing I know, I'm sitting in AA, and I'm bored to death. Like, I'm counting how many people are sharing at my home group, so it's time to be done, because I care too much about what you're thinking to look at my comic. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I was bored. I didn't have any sponsees. I hadn't had any sponsees in a while. Like, I had no passion, no nothing. Nothing. But I showed up. And I went, I will be damned if I'm going back to that place where I was. And I know, doesn't matter how bored I am, doesn't matter what is going on, I know that this is where I belong. That this is my home. And it doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter if I'm bored. It doesn't matter. This is where I belong. And I better sit down and I better show up. You know, and I wasn't showing up to my home group on time. And I'm like, well, on the time for me, it's like half an hour early. Like 15 minutes. Like, that's good enough. Like, my job, I'm like, I don't have to be there. It's 6 o'clock to set up chairs. I'm there a quarter after people help. I don't know what's going on, but that's just where I was, and I'm kind of getting over that now. You know, oh, so then I tried to force, like, I'd heard this, like, 5-year sobriety, 7-year sobriety, you get to this weird unraveling thing, and I was like, I, like, tried to force that on myself. I don't know. But, I mean, I know that this is where I belong. I can say God and my creator now. I don't really have much more of a definition than it works. That's it. That's it. I pray and you know, I'll be at work and people are like mean and I don't like them or whatever. Before I go in the patient's room, like, I pray. And all of a sudden, like, I'm kind and compassionate and I care about them. Like, instead of caring about myself, and I'm there, and my hip hurts, and whatever, I care about them. And I'm okay. So, anyway, thank you so much.